Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, along with former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, provide the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Brought to you by Baptist Health and by Everbank. Jaguars Thursday begins right now. Right now.
And welcome into Jaguars Thursday. Jeff Loggeman in here solo right now. We're going to be soon joined by the pride of the Jaguars himself, Tony Baselli. J.P. Shadrick has got the night off. And if you'd like to listen to J.P., he actually doesn't have the night off because he is actually calling the Kennesaw State game at the University of North Florida, which is going to be on 1010 XL AM. And it's a game that's also on ESPN3. So J.P. Shadrick taking a big step up. Jaguar news today. I don't know if you guys happen to see that. The staff is taking shape. Obviously, with the previous naming of the offensive coordinator, Greg Olson, and Doug Marrone as the offensive line coach and the assistant head coach. Then you also have the positions of Kelly Skipper, the running back coach that comes in from the Oakland Raiders. So a little familiarity with the offensive system with Greg Olson there. But the latest news is now that the quarterback coaching position has been solidified. And the man that's going to handle that is Nathaniel Hackett, quarterback's coach, and he has got relations with Doug Marrone coming from the Buffalo Bills. He was the offensive coordinator for the past two seasons for Doug Marrone in Buffalo. So it looks like the staff is taking shape. Terry Richardson was let go by the Jaguars. The question that I had when I found out that Nathaniel Hackett was going to be the quarterback's coach was what would happen to Frank Selfo. And Frank Selfo, a good friend of mine, a guy that I admire. He's actually got a track record of developing quarterbacks, and I think he's got a lot to offer this organization. And right now the word is that Frank Selfo will stay on staff and that the position or the exact position or the definition of his position will be determined at a later date. So that's good. So two guys, as far as position coaches, are going to stay with the Jaguars offensive staff, and two of them are my favorites. Ron Middleton. And I think Ron Middleton, the tight ends coach, has got great value for the Jaguars because he's actually got experience as a special teams coach. Many people don't know that Ron Middleton, when he was at Duke University, had one of the highest-ranking special teams in the country in college football. And I hate to say this, but it's the truth. If you can have a quality special teams unit at the University of Duke or Duke University, you're doing something. Not exactly the highest number of talented players at Duke University. Also, Jerry Sullivan will stay on staff as the wide receivers coach. So the offensive staff is pretty much has taken shape. So good news for the Jaguars. Now the question is with all the offseason rules and regulations that are concerning the collective bargaining agreement, at what time will they be able to pass the playbook on to the young quarterback, Blake Bortles? We're going to have that discussion with Tony Baselli and talk about the timeliness of that. As he walks into the studios right now, looking proud, wearing his USC hat.
Yes, sir.
Nice for you to join us. I was just kind of going over the Jaguars offensive staff has taken shape. Greg Olson, everybody's known about, offensive coordinator. And then Doug Marrone, assistant head coach, offensive line coach. Kelly Skipper, who comes from the Oakland Raiders, is going to handle the running backs position. And then what was just released a couple hours ago, Nathaniel Hackett, son of the great coach, Paul Hackett, is going to be the quarterback's coach now with the Jaguars. And so Frank Selfo's, the word is he's going to stay on staff and that defined role will be determined. So I was just telling people that I'm glad because I like Frank Selfo.
I love Frank Selfo. I think he's a good football coach too.
I think he's got a lot to offer.
Absolutely.
So
I'm not sure what that role is going to be.
Well, it can be many. I mean, there's so many jobs to do staff. And I think one of them could be the developmental of young players. It could be advanced scouting. It could be self-scouting. It could be an offensive coach taking a look at what your defense is doing from a different perspective and saying, hey, look, here's how I would attack you if I was playing you this week because here's what I'm seeing from watching the film of you.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of value.
And
Frank Selfo.
Personally, I'm happy for Frank because I like Frank.
Well, and let me add this here now. Frank Selfo and Blake Bortles had and have a great relationship. Now, it's been reported that departed offensive coordinator Jed Fish and Blake Bortles didn't have exactly a great relationship. I don't know the truth to that. I asked Blake about that, and he said, hey, we were fine. But I think a lot of times in that instance as a player, you're not going to want to burn any bridges, and you're just going to be kind. And as far as Jed, and you've talked to Jed.
I have.
As far as he knows, him and Blake had a great relationship.
Yeah, but sometimes the person who's a part of the bad relationship is the last person to understand or realize that they're the problem.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's the case. And I think, listen, the only people that really know are Blake and probably Jed. But Blake more than anything, how he feels. And whatever those feelings are, don't matter anymore.
No.
And it's not productive, and it doesn't mean anything. And Blake is being very, very smart how he's handling it, whether he's telling the truth or he's just he's saying to put it under to turn the page. I don't know which one it is, but he's handling it right.
Well, I think you're dead on the money that you're handling it right, because what are you going to accomplish by saying anything negative anyway?
Never burn a bridge.
Well, it's not about burning bridges.
Well, I'm just saying, and it's not productive.
Who would it benefit?
Nobody. That's the whole point.
It can
actually hurt you as a player by saying and coming out negative. Because it puts you in a bad light, and it starts back and forth, and nobody wins there. So I think he's handled it perfectly.
Well, I think he's handled it well. And did you get a chance to listen to him today on Jaguars Today with Mike Dempsey? He was on Radio Row.
I actually heard him on.
He was on NFL
Van,
Today.
I heard him on the Scott Van Pelt Show.
Yeah.
And Ryan Russo, whatever that show is on ESPN. I heard him talking to them, and he sounded great, did an outstanding job, and represented himself and the team very well.
That's one thing I think that impresses me the most, is that when you listen to Blake talk, I think he's got a natural humbleness about him. And I think anytime you're a quarterback and you're trying to improve, that you've got to be able to identify what your weaknesses are. And I think you got to be humble to be able to do that. And I think that's the one trait that I think going forward for the Jaguars that you latch on to with a young Blake Bortles, is that you realize that this guy realizes where he's at and where he's got to be. And the fact that he recognizes that at a very young age, because, you look around the league and some of these other young quarterbacks, and I look at Geno Smith for the New York Jets. Have you ever heard a humble thought come out of Geno Smith's mouth? And I'm not saying he's a bad guy, but I'm saying that, you've got to be able to have a little bit of that to allow you to improve and move forward as the leader of a franchise and at the most critical position on the football field.
Listen, there's a way to communicate, and there's a way not to. And when you're the leader, even if you're your own player, because you're the quarterback, you're viewed as that. What you say, and not just what you say, but how you say it, is very important. And I think the best way to describe what Blake does is, number one, he's a man's man. He's a guy's guy. He's just – he doesn't view himself. And so often the problem guys get into is they view themselves at an elevated level. And so without even trying to, they talk down to people. They aren't inclusive. They don't come across as with humility.
I think the one guy
and Blake doesn't do that.
The one guy that when you talk about that, that characteristic or that trait, and I love Byron Leftwich. He was one of my favorite guys, and I liked Byron when he came in here. But I liked him more after he got to Pittsburgh and he kind of realized what he was, which was basically a career backup and wasn't going to be a franchise guy. Because I thought that he grew leaps and bounds as a person by getting a big dose of humble pie. Because when he was young here, he was one of those guys that kind of thought he arrived. And I remember after his rookie year, he was extremely disappointed that he didn't make the Pro Bowl after his rookie year.
Oh, sometimes our self-awareness is not very good as athletes or as people in general. And because of that, you come across as, in a poor manner. And I think Blake's got a good sense of humility about him and understands where he is in his career and who he is, but also understands the responsibility as the quarterback of the NFL franchise and what that means and how he acts and talks and – does interviews, and everything is going to be looked at, and how he communicates is very important, and not just to the fans and to the people he's talking to, but teammates. And Jeff, you know that as well as I do, is being in a locker room, when a guy is like that or comes across that way or gives interviews that way, Everybody in the locker room looks at him with, you know, kind of out of the side of their, you know, a little talking out of the side of his mouth a little bit and just kind of look at him sideways and say, you know, I'm not sure about that guy. And Blake's done it, you know, and you listen to the interviews and him on Radio Row and on ESPN and all the other medians he's been on this week, and he's done a great job.
And he talked about with some of the people about, and Mike Dempsey put a pretty good name on it. He called it Camp Blake, which is basically going to be a passing camp that's going to be held in the month of February out in California, where Blake, I guess, is determined there's a place out there that he is going to be working out in the offseason at. And has invited all of the Jaguar offensive guys, as far as the young wide receiving core and everybody else, to come on out and work out with him. And, I mean, for a young player to be able to set that up and to – and, look, I don't know if he came up with this on his own or if it was through some guidance, through some of the coaching staff.
My guess is guidance.
Which I'm sure – but that's okay.
Player, that's fine. I mean, listen.
Yeah, that's what you
people
want.
People give guidance all the time that people won't listen to.
No. But it'd be just the simple fact that he's saying – he's the one that's reaching out to the guys, because it can't be the coaching staff saying, hey, you guys need to do this.
Yeah, they can't do it.
It's fine to suggest it to a guy, but at the end of the day, your quarterback needs to take ownership in that. And it's very apparent that he has taken ownership in that, and he's the one that is the guiding force in this passing camp that's going to be in the month of February. Now, I don't know if they're even going to have the playbook in the month of February, but I don't think that matters so much as it does spending time with your guys and throwing to your guys in February and spending some time working on timing routes, because, I mean, the routes aren't that different in the National Football League.
Not everyone runs the same stuff. It's just called different at different times.
Exactly.
Different formations.
So, I mean, to run, you know, and all the routes, if you look at an offensive system, they put numbers on the routes. A 1, a 2, a 3, a 7. All the routes have numbers. So, if all the routes have numbers, that's pretty much a standardized system for the most part. So, you can run all the routes. The combinations of the routes are different. And you can figure that out later on. But at least you can get some timing with the standardized routes that are going to be in the National Football League.
Well, I think the most important thing is, or maybe just as important, I don't know if it's more or not, but it's him getting and working on his mechanics. Because I think if there was the biggest flaw we saw this year, and we saw it improve from training camp until he started, but then I think it plateaued because when you're the starter, you don't get to work on that stuff as much.
No, you're worried about the mental aspect.
You're worried about the game plan. So I'd like him to see where he kind of stopped when he became the starter and really focus and get those mechanics. Because the one thing I think you and I, you know, talked about as we did the games, and you brought it up first, you got to make the easy throws look easy.
Mm-hmm.
You got to – what's out there and what's easy to accomplish and to complete and get done, those have to be easy plays that are made consistently. And then, you know – I think we all know and have confidence he can make the tough throws and is not afraid to stick it in there in tight windows and everything and press the field, ball down the field. But it's just the mechanics. That's all mechanics stuff that he's going to have to work on.
Well, and the new quarterbacks coach, Nathaniel Hackett, is going to be one of the guys that's going to be given the duty of working with some of those mechanics. And I would have to think if Frank Selfo is going to stay on staff and with the great experience that he has with working with quarterbacks, that's probably going to be a team effort. I mean, why not? I mean, it's just because you have a guy who's in name the quarterback's coach, why wouldn't you use the experience and the knowledge of both guys to develop not only Blake Bortles, Stephen Morris, Chad Henne? I mean, continue to develop Chad Henne. Chad Henne's not an old man by any stretch of the imagination. So, but with Nathaniel Hackett, he doesn't have a tremendous amount of experience with just the quarterback position. He's coached a lot of different positions, and he's still a relatively young guy.
What else, wide receivers, quarterbacks?
Well, as far as positions that he's coached?
Isn't that the main two, if I'm not mistaken?
Well, he's 35 years old. He was the offensive quality control coach, 6 years in the NFL, 2 years quality control coach, Tampa Bay Buccaneers from 06-07. Two more as the offensive quality control coach for the Bills from 08-09, and then the past two as the Bills' offensive coordinator. He worked with quarterbacks and tight ends at Syracuse in 10. And then 11 and 12 was the offensive coordinator at Syracuse, and obviously that time was spent under Doug Marone at Syracuse.
So mainly quarterbacks and not wide receivers. Mainly quarterbacks and tight. I guess a little bit of the receiving position as concerning tight ends.
But you know what? When you look at some of the great quarterbacks in the National Football League, does Tom Brady have a great quarterback coach in New England that helps him with mechanics? Tom Brady goes to California. What's the guy's name that he goes and sees every year?
Some guy in Northern California.
And it's a guy that teaches I think he's even got some type of baseball background as well.
Yeah, I should know the name because he coaches baseball, helps the baseball players at USC.
Yeah, I mean, he's a
– Hunter, Tom, no, I can't. It'll come to me.
But, I mean, Tom Brady, I mean, he's well-respected.
Very well-respected.
From around everybody in the National Football League. You know, so I think that a lot of the mechanics things, I mean, Blake Bortles doesn't necessarily have to sit there and wait on Nathaniel Hackett or
no,
Frank Sofo.
No, not at all.
Because, you'd be wasting time.
Go to wherever you have confidence and start working immediately on your mechanics and what you can, you know, what you need to improve on, and he knows. And that's going to make a big difference of how he – Tom Martinez is his coach.
Yeah.
Tom Brady, I should say. But that's going to give him a lot more confidence. Listen, when you're confident in the basics and the fundamentals, what you're trying to do, and you don't have to think about them, it opens up everything else and lets you kind of let loose and play the game.
All right, other Jaguar news before we start looking at some of the Super Bowl things, and also I want to get your thoughts on the Senior Bowl, what you saw working with some of the offensive linemen with the South squad. But in Jaguar news, the Philadelphia Eagles have named their head personnel guy, and it goes to Ed – let me make sure I say this right – Marinowitz. Is that right, Joe?
Marinowitz.
And the reason that's related to the Jaguars is pro personnel director Chris Polian had a second interview with the Philadelphia Eagles. And so that's good for the Jaguars. Chris Polian's got great experience. Him and Dave Caldwell have a great relationship. Yes, Joe?
Tom Martinez was his coach.
Yeah,
he passed away in 2012.
I was looking at this. Tom House is now.
Tom House.
Yes,
Tom House.
Yes.
I knew it was a Tom. And looking at the article, I was about to say that before he came on. Tom Martinez passed away, and Tom House is now who – Tom House is the one who works with the USC baseball team as well, who has some different philosophies and mechanics of how he does things and how he strengthens the arm and flexibility and everything else. And so he's had – Tom Brady's had two different quarterback coaches, one who's passed away and another who's he works with now and has also worked with baseball players and other athletes.
Well, and just to wrap up that thought on Chris Polian – I'm glad to see him back. I really like Chris Polian. I think he's very good for the Jaguars. He's got great experience. Obviously, he's been involved in the National Football League, been around his father for many years, also the general manager with the Indianapolis Colts, and it's always good to have people that have great experience with a personnel staff as well. So that's good news for the Jaguars organization and should be good news for the Jaguars fans. Folks, help your elementary school students submit their entry for the Jaguars Garden Essay Contest by February 16th. And you can get a chance to win a school visit from the Jacksonville Jaguars and a football prize pack. For details, visit jaguars.com/essay. And we come back here on Jaguars Thursday. Want to find out if Tony Boselli may have found out one of the draft picks from his time at the Senior Bowl coaching the offensive line.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
And welcome back to Jaguars Thursday. Jeff Loggeman alongside Tony Boselli. JP Shadrick has got
basketball tonight.
An assignment tonight. He's going to be on 1010XL. Just ESPN3. Not going to be on 1010XL. And why do you have that on the board? 1010XL, ESPN3. That's on. Okay. So the game is going to be on 1010XL, but if you want to listen to JP Shadrick, you've got to go to ESPN3.
Internet.
Gotcha.
He's
online.
Internet announcer.
Okay. And that's Kennesaw State at UNF tonight, which will start right after Jaguars Thursday at 7 o'clock. All right, Tony, the Senior Bowl, you got to coach a little bit with the offensive line. Did you have a good time?
You know, it was an outstanding time. I really enjoyed it. And part of that, I mean, listen, Gus and the staff were great to work with and were very inclusive. And you know, especially with everything that was going on and, you know, changing of coaches and, you know, new offensive coordinator kind of right at the beginning of the week and a lot of unknowns. And
But before you go on, I mean, Greg Olsen was just named the offensive coordinator at the beginning of the Senior Bowl week.
Yeah.
Was he at the
Senior
Bowl? No,
he was not. Neither him or Doug Marrone were there.
Okay.
And so it was last year's staff that was intact, that was there.
Without Jed Fish.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a situation that could have been really hard, and I'm sure it was difficult for, you know, guys, because if you're on the offensive staff, it's all unknown.
Yeah.
You're not sure what's going to happen. And this is their livelihood, which I respect 100%. And so not really, you know, knowing, you know, how that was going to be. And I could say from the day I got there until the day I drove back on the bus with all the staff, it was a great experience. And like I said, very inclusive, and it made it very comfortable and made it like I was one of the guys and one of the coaches. And I had a ton of fun. And to be able to coach the South team and work with those offensive linemen and try to help them get better, it was I really enjoyed it. I honestly, there was not one aspect of it that I said, you know, I don't know if I really like that. It was a great time.
How many offensive linemen was on the South squad?
10 guys.
Ten guys.
10 on each team. So you have two full rotation
two deep,
groups.
Pretty much at every position.
Yep.
And out of those 10 guys, if you know, looking at what they, a lot of the draft prognosticators predict, who is the highest pick, who many people expect to go the highest in the draft?
You know, I haven't looked at them yet, but I heard coming in it was Lael Collins, the offensive left tackle from LSU.
Okay.
I think he was rated the highest on our team. I thought the best player on our team was the left guard, Ari Quanjo from Alabama. I thought he had as far as who had the best week. I mean, I haven't, you know, the scouts have whole different opinions because they've watched, you know, 12, 13 games on these guys.
Right.
I worked with him for 1 week. And
but you know what, Tony? Do you need more than a week to get a pretty good idea?
No, I have a pretty good idea what they're going to can do and what they can't do.
Out of those 10 offensive linemen, if you were running a draft, who would be your highest guy?
Well, I'd have picked Ari Quanjo. I mean,
highest.
Yeah. Now, he's a guard, so you're not going to take him in the first round unless it's late. And I think, you know, my guess is I'm not sure where he'll get drafted. The North, I think, had better overall offensive linemen. Some guys were going to get drafted high. They had the guard from Duke, who's a pretty highly rated guy.
Duke's got a highly rated guy.
Yeah, he's a good offense. He's a good player, and they had
I just got done criticizing Duke not having the most talent.
Oh, they got it
before you got here.
They have a really good. I think he's a right guard.
But it's not. I mean, no offense to Duke. I mean, it's a great university, great basketball program. The football program has had moments where they've been pretty good.
I'll say this right now, Jeff. It is regarded higher than your Virginia football program.
No,
I'm just telling you.
No,
you go. I was talking to scouts, not our scouts. There, because you know, everyone in the league is there. I mean, scout wise, and GMs and everything else. And talking to other scouts and GMs, one of their favorite programs and guys, as far as starting to really produce guys is Duke, and what David Cutcliffe is doing there. Yeah, they spoke very highly of him.
Good for them. I root for them.
Back in the day, not too long ago, you're exactly right.
I remember going
the doormat
all the way back to when. When I had a visit to Duke University.
You weren't going there?
All the way back in 19 – well, I went there on an official visit. That was 1985, which is a very long time ago, 30 years ago. And went to the campus of Duke, and it was a great campus. I mean, the main reason I took the visit was one of my high school buddies played basketball for the Duke Blue Devils. His name was Billy King, two-time NCAA Defensive Player of the Year. Great player. And wanted to go down and see him and – and so, but the facilities at that time at Duke University,
well, they just built
football program were just
they're
terrible.
Building brand new facilities right now.
And the stadium was like, I remember going to a Duke game because my brother played at Virginia prior to me going there. And so I actually went to games at Duke, and I remember going to the games at Duke thinking there were some high school football games that had just as many people that were in the stands as this one.
They're actually in, and I don't know how we're getting on the infomercial for Duke, but I think someone told me they're putting like $60 to $100 million in the stadium, and they just got done redoing the entire weight room, locker room, all the football stuff. And so they're investing a lot. And,
good for them.
But the guard was good.
Well, the reason I always say that I root for Duke is that, you know, Duke and Virginia, Stanford, I believe, is the other school typically have the highest graduation rates of any football program in the country. So I always root for those teams.
So I'll give you a funny story about that. So one of the things we get to do at the Senior Bowl on Friday, you switch squads. And so we got an hour with the North offensive line.
Doing what?
Interviews.
Okay. So not coaching on the field or anything.
No, interviews. And so Luke Buckus and Moose, they took the who was this Luke's assistant this year, they took one at a time separately and did one-on-one interviews, and they had a whole thing they had to fill out that the scouts gave them to do. And so I sat in the room with the rest of the other eight North offensive linemen and just talked to them about what to expect and asked them questions and small talked for an hour. And so one of the things that we talked about a bunch of things, but I asked them, what are your, what do you guys like to do? Hobbies. You got fishing, a bunch of guys like fishing and, video games and, music. I mean, and so I asked the Duke guy. I said, hey, what's your hobby?
Quantum physics.
And I can't think of his name right now because it's a.
I'll see if I can pull it up.
It's not an easy name to pronounce. He says he likes to read and video games. I said, all right, cool. I said, well, like, what kind of stuff do you like to read?
Uh-huh.
Psychology research papers.
What? For real?
I give you my word.
His name is Lakin Tomlinson.
Yeah, Lincoln. And I looked at him. I'm like,
he likes to read research papers
on psychology.
On psychology.
Yeah. I think he's a psychology major or something like that. And research papers. And I said, I haven't read a research paper since I had to when I was in college. And a good laugh. But he's a great kid and a really good football player. So it was a great week. And so, but I think what the Senior Bowl has become more and more, Jeff, because you see more and more juniors come out who are in the first round, and the top-end guys, if they're seniors, don't go to any of the bowl games. It really is a back-of-the-first-end, a few back-of-the-first-end guys, and then a second to, fifth or sixth-round game.
Yeah, mostly and, maybe a little sprinkling of day two.
And that's what you're going to find.
A lot of day three, four.
Yeah, and that's what you're – and it's a great opportunity because, listen, you can find – you can find good players and guys who – not just who, have the physical traits that you can see at the combine, but you find out how they learn. Because you sit in a meeting room. This was amazing. So you come in Monday, and Monday night you have your install meeting because you're going on the practice field full – not full pads, but uppers and helmets for a full practice on Tuesday. So we put in the entire offense, huddle, snap count, run game, pass game, as far as protections. And we met, I think, 30 or 45 minutes in the morning before, maybe an hour in the morning as well before. And everything's in. And then as well as teach them what individuals going to be like and how, what drills we're going to do. And they got to go out there and execute all the things that you just throw at them that you'd like, a few days to put in.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives you a great chance to see how these guys learn and how much they can comprehend. Just the littlest things that I started looking at is like, okay, who's taking notes? Who's paying it? And you really learn about a guy. And then when you get on the field, what you learn is how coachable are they? Because there are guys, and I'm not going to say their names, that you could tell didn't like being coached very hard.
They had it all figured. They had all the answers.
They kind of look at you like, and then you could tell guys who are like, listen, I want to learn, and I want to know what you know, and would come up after a play and say, what did you see? What can I do better? Tell me what you're saying. That are engaged. So it's very valuable for the coaching staff and the scouts to get around those guys because I think you can find good players out of that game in the second, third, fourth, fifth round.
Much like the Jaguars did last year.
Telvin Smith.
That's why they jumped at the opportunity.
Telvin Smith. They had Telvin Smith last year, and they realized quickly the guy can play.
All right, well, let's take a break, folks. Prime Sport is the leading global sports travel and event management company offering corporate and fan travel packages and hospitality events for corporations, professional sports teams, and fans. For more information, visit primesport.com. And when we come back here on Jaguars Thursday, we're going to talk to the host of Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, who has been out all week at the Super Bowl. And we'll do that right here on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
And Republic Services is the undisputed leader in recycling in Northeast Florida. They're the official waste provider of the Jaguars and have been proudly serving the residents and business of Northeast Florida for over 30 years. Call Republic Services for all your waste and recycling solutions, and they will take it from here. All right, let's take our phone lines out to Arizona and bring in the host of Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey. What's happening, Mike?
What's up, fellas? How are you? Long day. Just got done with. Sorry I missed you at the top of the show.
Nah, that's okay. I know that you had some serious radio, and then you also had a lot going on out there today. All right, so today I'm listening. You guys are on Radio Row. You did a great job the last couple of days of getting different guests. But my favorite guest of the time that I was listening to you this week was Frank Caliendo.
Totally. I say it every year, Jeff. If I could have one guy on, you're going to have Frank Caliendo on because he's 20-1, right? I mean, and honestly, I think he's more subdued than I've ever seen him. I think he was exhausted. He's been running around, you know, all week long doing all different things. He was hosting a roast this afternoon for Terry Bradshaw. He shared a little bit of his material with us, which was tremendous, and then was hopping on a flight to L.A., doing a show there tonight, getting on a plane right after that, flying back here, and he's back working in Phoenix at 8 in the morning. So he's a busy man. I mean, he's got a great gig, certainly, and he's carved out a great niche for himself, but he is a hustler, no doubt about it.
Demps, what is your favorite Caliendo impression?
I think Gruden's kind of grown on me quite a bit, but I think Lou Holtz is maybe the most spot-on impersonation. You know, he does, Gruden isn't quite exactly John Gruden. You don't think it's him, at least I don't, but Lou Holtz, not only that, he showed me a picture of him in makeup as Lou Holtz. You know, he's going to do his big montage leading up to the Super Bowl. It's going to air at 11:30 on Super Bowl Sunday on ESPN, and he showed me a picture of him in Lou Holtz makeup, and it's spot on. The voice is spot on, so I think that's probably the best one he did, but Gruden, to me, is probably my favorite one.
See, I think his most spot-on one, and the Lou Holtz is outstanding. The Chris Berman is
Morse code.
It's awesome.
That was hilarious.
I mean, the Chris Berman, the Morse code to when he actually does some Chris Berman. I mean, it is great. That's my favorite.
Yeah, Berman's very obviously an easy target because he's, you know, you immediately recognize the voice and the gestures. He does the whole thing.
Oh, he's
and,
great.
You know, he's got the facial tics and expressions. So, yeah, he's mastered it, man. He's carved it out. And I think right now ESPN's lucky to have him.
I thought it was amazing how he actually studies everybody's mannerisms and that the way that they speak. You know, their tempo, whether it's fast at the beginning.
He's talented.
I mean, he's unbelievable. But and Joe Fortunato, by the way, Demp said that Morgan Freeman, the impersonation that Caliendo does of Morgan Freeman is the best.
Oh, he does do a good Morgan Freeman, yeah. Yeah, he didn't do him today. He probably did Obama, George Bush, Clinton, which, you know, is basically all in the context. With Clinton, you just talk about the cheerleaders. You know,
and, oh, that's beautiful.
You just highlight certain aspects of their personality. Yeah, he's fantastic.
All right, well, besides Frank Caliendo, because he was the most entertaining that I heard this week, and I wasn't able to listen to every day of your program, but I caught as much as I could. In your mind, who was the next best guest that you had and why?
Boy, you know, it's going to sound crazy, but to me, I really enjoyed talking to Blake. I mean, we talked to Blake Bortles quite a bit, but I just felt like he was really refreshed. A few weeks off, get him good, just kind of relax his mind. So he was really loose. But I'll say, among others, tomorrow you'll hear an interview with Deontay Wilder. He is the new American WBC heavyweight champion of the world. First time an American's held the belt in nearly 10 years. He is very entertaining. He said something, and I'm not quoting him directly, but something to the effect of, he's got a broken hand. I said, how do you break? He goes, this is what happens when you hit a guy in the chin about five times in a row. He was a lot of fun. And then today on Sirius, Maurice Jones-Drew and I had Barry Sanders on, and you know, I mean, that guy's, you know, legendary status. He's, you know, the Mount Rushmore running back, certainly one of the greatest players to ever play the game. So there's a little something for everybody. You know, you got some guys who aren't the big names who have some of the best human interest stories. So whether, you know, you're a fan of the local team in Jacksonville, whether you're just a fan of the NFL and some of the stars, or, you know, just some great stories that you get to catch up with, it's hard to pick one favorite.
Well, and I find it almost comical that everybody that comes on, I mean, they have something to promote.
Oh, gosh.
Which, you know, which can drive you crazy because, I mean, but you got to do it. I mean, that's kind of the charge for getting the guest on the air. So, I mean, you understand it. But out of all your guests, who was the cheesiest as far as promoting whatever it was that they were there to promote?
Boy, they're all pretty good. I'll tell you, the guy who, over in recent years, I haven't seen him this year, and this is maybe the first time in the 10 years I've been covering Super Bowls that I haven't seen Lynn Swann on Radio Row. He takes the cake, because this guy, you go, hey, Lynn, how you doing? He goes, let me tell you about Burger King. I mean, right into, you haven't even said hello, basically, and he's into the spiel about Burger King. Look, they're getting paid good money to do this. A few years back, I had somebody tell me that Joe Montana, who was on there in on behalf of the Avocado Growers of California, was being paid $100,000 for one day, get on as many stations as you can, you know, basically 8 to 10 hour day, and you're done. I'll be as cheesy as you want me to be for $100,000.
What do you want me to sell? Hey, Mike.
Exactly.
Back to the, let's focus on the game a little bit. You know, obviously Deflategate, but besides Deflategate, what's the storyline out there in Arizona this week?
I think the big thing is that there's no consensus, guys. I mean, you know, you look in Vegas with a pick 'em, it's a 1-point line. This is as close to a game. You're getting as many people giving you with conviction that the Patriots are going to win as you do with the Seahawks, but more people, you know, Marshall Faulk, we had him on today, and he said, you know, look, I'm going to tell you who, when it's time to make a pick, I will make a pick, but I'll tell you right now, I'm not going to be confident in the pick I make because it is such a toss-up. I think, you know, people are starting to hone in on the Patriots' versatility a little bit. Can they take advantage of the injuries in the secondary with the Seahawks? Can Marshawn Lynch continue his run as one of the best postseason runners of all time? I mean, there's a lot of great storylines to choose from. You got the dynasty of the last 15 years versus the current version of the best in the league, kind of for the crown of who stands the tallest in the National Football League, and that's the way it should be.
Well, and from talking to the football guys that have been on your show this week, where were they at? Are they picking the Patriots for the most part, or are they picking the Seahawks, or are they split as well?
I think they're pretty split. Maybe a few more on the Patriots, and a little bit surprising because, you know, they're saying, look, how are they going to handle this offense? They have so many different weapons. Do they forget how many weapons Denver had last year when they took on the Seahawks defense? Now, the question is this the same Seahawks defense that we saw last year? You know, some personnel changes. We reaped the benefits in Jacksonville of a couple of those guys in Red Bryant and Chris Clemens. And again, you know, is Richard Sherman going to be able to hold up? Can LeGarrette Blount run right at him? Will they run Gronkowski to Sherman's side? Will they try to really test the physicality of Earl Thomas in that shoulder? You know, there's a lot of different angles. You can pick the one that you think is most important. I think that's what people are doing. And again, I think opinions are pretty split. Maybe a couple more of the guests that we've had on, the football people picking the Patriots, but not by a wide margin.
Hey, Mike, one of the things I found interesting, because obviously, Bill Belichick gets so much attention, and again, in this game, talking about his legacy, you know, what if he wins 6 Super Bowl, you know, all the, you know, 6 Super Bowl appearance could be 4 wins.
Sure.
Is Pete Carroll getting overlooked a little bit? Because if he wins this game, I don't know if there's another coach at any level that will have 2 national championships and 2 Super Bowl victories.
Probably not. Do they still count 2 at USC? I'm not sure what the
official
record book says on that one.
He won 2.
you're probably right, Tony. I mean, Jimmy Johnson had the 2 Super Bowls and a national championship, and then Barry Switzer came in and took over that team. But, you know, and I guess in this matchup, we've called Belichick a genius for so many years. No matter what you think about Spygate and all this other stuff, he's regarded as, you know, arguably in some circles as the greatest of all time. And when you're held to that standard, it's tough for people to put Pete Carroll in there, because really they look at, well, he's done it for, you know, the last 2 years he's had great teams, but you're right. 2 on each level. I mean, I don't care where you rank him, he's got to be considered one of the greatest coaches of all time, certainly one of the most accomplished coaches of all time. That goes without saying.
He's a great coach and a good friend of mine, had a great experience to be able to play for Pete Carroll when he was in New York, and I got a lot of respect for him. The Deflategate story, is it finally going away? I mean, because you know what? I'm so tired of hearing about that and getting asked about it still.
Yeah, well, look, I think it's died down. We're not talking about it on Radio Row. You know, that's it's kind of in the rear view. I think it died mostly a natural death at Media Day. You're going to get some questions about that. But what are you going to get? You're not going to get any reaction. The Patriots are savvy. We understand the Patriot way, and part of that is not giving you any kind of quote that's going to create controversy. And the Seahawks are the same way. Now, they're a little more outwardly braggadocious, but they're not looking to take cheap shots. They're going to talk more about how great they are rather than some perceived flaw with New England, whether it's Deflategate or anything else. So, yeah, I think the fact, you know, to me, the story's been eclipsed by the fact that Marshawn Lynch keeps giving these five-minute press conferences and saying a different one-liner every day.
So if you're
looking for the theater of the absurd, that's where it is.
I love that, though.
Is there any, I mean, but Mike, just one last question of Deflategate. Is there any doubt in anyone's mind that Tom Brady didn't know what was going on with the footballs that he prepares before the game, and that some ball boy just on his own went and took a couple PSI out of the balls? And even
that's pretty ridiculous.
I mean, it's the most asinine thing I've heard. And the fact is, as a quarterback, you can feel the difference in a ball.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to be a quarterback, Tony. Anybody who's ever played catch in the backyard can feel the difference between a fully inflated and a less than fully inflated football. And unless you have hands like King Kong, of course it's easier to throw the less inflated football. You get a little bit better grip. You can dig your fingers in that much more. And in a game where the conditions were as swampy as they were, as much rain.
I was there. You know, it was awful.
That's the little edge. And look, it turns out they probably didn't need it.
No, they didn't.
But that's kind of the legacy here. You know, do they go above and beyond even when it's not necessary? And that's kind of in the sum total of this era of Belichick, Brady, and New England. It's part of the story.
Well, so since it's the last time we're going to talk to you before the game, who are you picking, Mike?
I went with Seattle over New England to start the year before the season. I rarely get both participants in the Super Bowl right. They've made it this far. I don't know if it's stubbornness or fear I'm going to make the wrong thing. I'm sticking with the Seahawks. Again, I think Russell Wilson is criminally underrated in some circles. I don't think he's a game manager. I think he's more than that. I think he's a special player. I recognize the fact that Belichick can take something away from you. They may try to contain him in the pocket and prove he can beat him. I don't know if he can. Throwing to Doug Baldwin and Jermaine Kearse. But I think they'll find a way to get Russell Wilson loose on the edge. I think it's going to be tough to contain that and stop Marshawn Lynch. And that defense is still spectacular. I'm going to go with the Seahawks in what I hope is a barn burner of a game, something in the 31-27 kind of range.
And it's nothing better than being right.
I'd love to be right, Jeff. You're absolutely right.
We all do. We all do.
All right, Mike, thank you. And, folks, you can listen to Mike Dempsey every weekday right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM with Jaguars today. Mike, have a great week. When are you coming back?
We'll be back actually Saturday. Not sticking around for the game. I'll be in the cozy confines in front of my widescreen taking this one in, guys.
All right, well, enjoy it, and thank you for time, Mike.
Travel safe, Mike.
Great job being
Thanks,
done
guys.
Out there. Mike Dempsey, folks, every day right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Jaguars today from 10 to 12. And then also every week now on Jaguars.com, John Osher and J.P. Shadrick have special guests at 1 p.m. to keep you informed of the latest Jaguar news and take your social media questions. Jaguars.com live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. on Jaguars.com. And you can go to Jaguars.com and watch the version that they had this week, which was the offensive coordinator Greg Olsen. Outstanding interview being done on Jaguars.com. One more segment here on Jaguars Thursday right after this on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to Jaguars Thursday. Jeff Lagerman and Tony Baselli. J.P. Shatter's got the night off. Calling the game on ESPN3, the Kennesaw State at UNF game, which is going to be on 1010XL right after we get off the air. Also on 92.5 FM. After us, the USC Upstate, which is University of South Carolina Upstate, is at JU, and that's on 92.5 FM. All right, now it's time to take a look around the NFL, a 360-degree look presented by 360 Access. Don't mess around when it comes to game time. The 360 Access team of experts is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to make sure you have the best experience for the biggest games of the year. Visit 360access.com to learn more. All right, Tony, the Broncos have a little bit of a reunion going on. Wade Phillips was hired as the defensive coordinator in Denver. Good hire or not a good hire?
Well, listen, I think the history tells you, you know, at least for the first couple years that he is the defensive coordinator, teams take a big jump. Now, that was a pretty good defense before, you know, before he got there. And with Jack Del Rio as a coordinator, who's now the head coach at the Oakland Raiders, they're going to go to a 3-4. But in today's game, the 3-4, 4-3 is so interchangeable, especially how a lot of guys are running the 4-3, that I think, you know, they have the personnel that, you know. So, listen, I think it's a fine hire. Is it a long-term hire?
Probably
no.
Not.
No.
But I mean, they're not in it for the long term. I mean, they're in it for as long as Peyton Manning is going to be there.
And, well, they've mortgaged everything, and there's no guarantee he's coming back. I mean, he still hasn't announced that he's going to come back.
Along those same lines, Archie Manning had a comment about Peyton playing this year, and he said if he decides to play, he'll be fine. He said it's not a concern that the offensive coordinator has gone to follow John Fox to Chicago, Adam Gase.
So, yeah, I want to know how Gary Kubiak's going to call a game with Peyton Manning as his quarterback, because one of Gary's favorite plays is the naked bootleg. And Peyton Manning is not running a naked bootleg.
No.
I mean, I could run him down. I am really slow.
If you're the head coach, do you keep the same offense that Peyton Manning ran, or do you alter it slightly to take some pressure off of him but then still have some of his passing principles that he's had for so long?
You ever hear the saying, it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks?
Yes.
I would keep what he's comfortable with.
Okay.
That's what I would do.
Well, along those same lines, the Raiders are still without a defensive coordinator. Todd Grantham decided to stay at Louisville, where he is currently the defensive coordinator. Jack Del Rio having a little bit of a hard time finding a defensive coordinator. Mike Smith was reported to be interested, but I don't think Smitty's going to be joining Jack in Oakland anytime soon.
Think Smitty rode that train once and doesn't want to get back on?
I have a feeling that would be the case. So no surprise there that
– I wonder if it makes a difference as guys, established guys that he tries to get, look at his track record the first time he was head coach, where he fired multiple people almost every year, it felt like.
Some of the greatest turnover that I have ever seen a head coach have. And we had a number on it at one point. It was like 29, 30 people that were
– Wayne was playing for a lot of coaches who weren't working.
Yeah, weren't working for the Jaguars.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit of concern if I was thinking about considering a job with – Jack Del Rio. All right, last thing, the Detroit Lions have proposed that the replay review to also look at penalties.
No.
You don't agree?
No.
Why?
So you're going to look at a play and see if there was holding?
Well, you'd have the ability to challenge a play that had a penalty. So you could challenge
the
call.
How much longer do we want the game to be?
I'm with you.
No. Okay. The human element is part of the game, and the officials are a part of the game. If they're going to do anything, change the rules about illegal contact down the field, the way they called it this year was ridiculous, and change the rules on the defenseless receiver and make it fair for the defense when a guy lowers his head and there's no area to hit him on. If they need to review anything, they need to review that play, the defenseless receiver play.
All right, and last thing here real quick. Aaron Hernandez trial started today for the murder of Odin Lloyd. We don't really have anything to add to that, but certainly you'll be reading about that in newspapers across the country over the next couple of days. All right,
it was all over the place.
Super Bowl, who you got? We got to call some picks.
Listen,
here.
I think it's a coin flip. I'm going to go with the Seattle Seahawks. I think they'll be able to run the ball. They've run the ball against everybody. That defense, yes, New England is multi-formation, multifaceted, multi-weapons, and Tom Brady obviously a great quarterback. But the Seattle defense, you look what they've done the last 9 games. It's unreal.
Yeah.
In today's game, I mean, they are dominant.
But I just got
the one thing that worries me, Jeff, though, if LeGarrette Blount gets going, and that might be a little bit of a weakness of the Seattle defense because they're not huge up front. If he gets going, that's the one thing that scares me.
You got a score? You going to put a score on it?
Yeah, everyone's talking. Like Dempsey was talking, you know, 27-31 or whatever. Tell me the last time the Seahawks gave up 27 points.
It's been a while.
I mean, I see a 21-24 game.
Okay. All right, but just to be a contrarian, I'm taking the Patriots. And the reason I say that is that the way that they have buzzsawed through the playoffs, that's a really good football team playing at a high level.
They didn't buzzsaw through Baltimore now. That
no,
was a tight
they
game.
But I mean that's just a historically competitive game.
Oh, I agree with that. And no, they had a
– It's like a division game.
Agreed.
So I'm going to take the Patriots. And I think that LeGarrette Blount will have a good day because I think the guys up front for the Seattle Seahawks aren't as
stout,
as they used to be. And I think that's going to be the difference in the game. And my score, I'm going to put a 24-14 on it.
All right.
We'll talk to everybody next week, same time, same place, right here on Jaguars Radio.